Okay, we'll get started today. This tranche of PLC calls, we do them in a series of 10, and this is the sixth one of this series, and we're talking to different grantees. Some are new, and many are experienced. And in particular, if you've been to them, you've seen a variety of different types of programs that are out there, and we're looking at different models, and we're going to have a separate section after we go through a number of these different grantees of what different people have used in terms of organization, whether they go it alone, their government agency, whether a tribe, or they join a much larger organization. And today we're going to talk to one such organization that is really an outstanding organization. But we always start first, of course, with news from Washington, GLO, and from HMTRI. So any news to share with everyone today?
Yeah, I talked to Rachel this morning, and they've been telling us that they anticipate announcing the 2016 grantees in the month of May, and this morning she said that they anticipate making that announcement on May 12th. So that was a little bit extra that we didn't know before. So May 12th, put that on your calendar. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that for those of you, and I think most of the people on this call today, are part of our HMTRI listserv, and I just wanted to make the announcement that we are in the process of moving our listserv into another software. I believe that's the right terminology. I'm not an IT person, so I don't know for sure, but the software that we were using for our listserv is no longer supported, so we're putting that into, I believe, a Google-type listserv that we are just in the process of moving now. So you may, at some point in the next couple of weeks, get an announcement of some kind that says that this listserv has moved, and there's nothing that you're going to need to do. I just wanted to give everybody a heads up that if you get that, it is supposed to be there. It's just because that we need to change the software and the way we do things. So just wanted to make that announcement. And then I also wanted to remind everyone that if you plan to attend the All Grantee meeting in August in Alexandria and you have not yet registered, please get those registrations in as soon as possible. The hotel's deadline is July 26th, and so we want to get everyone registered before that date. That's it for me, Mike.
Great. We'll put some other announcements, meetings and things, upcoming events, and any opportunities for funding in the post-session notes. Between the last PLC and this one, we did have a webinar. It was a HMTRI EPA webinar for people who didn't know what ACRES was and wanted to become familiar, whether they had just submitted a grant or just had curiosity, or for people who were working with ACRES but had some questions. And we went through the ACRES program. And what it is, ACRES is an acronym for Assessment, Cleanup, and Redevelopment Exchange System. That's a long word for basically a reporting system that OBLR, the Office of Brownfields and Revitalization, has, so they could get information about all of the brownfields, not just the workforce development program, but also the assessment, cleanup, all the different grants that they have among all their programs. And it's a way of charting progress throughout their entire grant system. The workforce one is fairly simple. There have been some glitches, and people usually moan when they hear the word ACRES, and usually because it's a little tricky getting on it, and they change the password every 90 days, and there's some questions, but there's just a few questions that have to be answered every quarter. It's a quarter report where you go online, and they ask for things like the number of people entering the program, how many are completing, how many vets you have, what's the starting salary, and something a little more complicated is regarding leveraging, who you're getting leverage funds from and trying to estimate how much they're giving you. This is just gives EPA a handle on what's out there amongst all their grantees. don't worry about it if you're not using it now. There's one person in every grant that is in charge of that. If you're not sure what it is and you're a new grantee, you'll be briefed after you get the award on the 12th. We're also going to have a session for existing grantees and new grantees all about ACRES, and anyone who has questions about that reporting system will be able to go to the session. And if you're not signed up, they could help you sign up. They usually will work with the regional coordinator to get you online. This is also, ACRES is just an online quickie reporting system. It doesn't replace your quarterly reports that you'll be sending to the regional coordinator. But that's the gist of the webinar that we had last week on ACRES. And you'll be hearing more about it. If you're still wondering what it is, I wouldn't worry about it right now. If you're the ACRES responsible party and you're wondering what it was, I'd be a little more concerned. But there's a help desk, and it's just something that everybody that's involved in this program needs to keep up with.
There's also a link to the webinar recording on the homepage of the Brownfields Toolbox website, along with the PowerPoint from Effie, who was the presenter for that. The Brownfields Toolbox website is brownfields-toolbox.org. And it's right there on the homepage.
Great. As I had said before, one of the themes that we're doing in this cycle of 10, and we'll be repeating a new cycle when we're finished with this 10, we're on the sixth one, are different models that people use in forming their program. And for new grantees or people who are thinking of submitting, it's something you may want to consider. And we're going to talk specifically about all these models at a later date. But right now we're talking to different grantees, and they're all really special grantees who have done an excellent job. And we've gone across the gamut of the different types of models. And we've had questions about the core, and people who were asking questions, is it possible to work with the core and set up a program? And, of course, our best example in our program in the EPA Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program is the LA Conservation Corps. And today we're fortunate to have Denise and Gabby talk about their program and how it fits into the Corps, the LA Corps. Now, they have been a very successful program. They've had 6 re-ups. They've competed every time, which anyone who has been involved in this knows that you're starting over every time. What you've done in the past makes a difference, but you've got to compete with lots of other programs. But they were originally awarded a grant in 2005 and 2007. They got some stimulus money in 2009, 12, and then again in 2014. And every time they've done an excellent job. They're working in a real tough neighborhood, South LA, Compton. This is what they do. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Denise and Gabby, and we'd be really interested in telling us about your program.
Well, good morning to some and good afternoon to others. This is Denise with LA Conservation Corps. A little bit about the Corps. We are a nonprofit agency that's been around we're hitting our 30th anniversary. Come next week, we're having a big luncheon. And the population that we serve is 18 to 24-year-olds, giving them a second chance at getting their high school diploma plus earning some work experience. With our environmental job training program, we have here at the Corps. It's about a 7-week long training we provide, and it has a series of like hazmat, asbestos, lead abatement, OSHA, first aid. We do the stormwater management training. We have a life skills week where we provide conflict resolution, budget, like financial literacy. We do anger management. We talk about things that can happen at work. You know, if you're having a bad day at work, what do you do? Resume building, mock interviews. And so some of those things is what we do during our life skills week. We also offer them a TWIC card, which is a background check where they can get clearance to work on any kind of federal jobs. We have an advisory board established, and our advisory board is made up of employers, training providers, community resource organizations, and workforce centers. We've been doing this for over 10 years. We also had the Minority Worker Training Grants before when we operated and held immediate environmental remediation training. Just trying to sum it up in a nutshell. Anything else I can?
One of the things that we focus on or that we've dealt with is, like, really addressing the barriers that some of them may come with. So in our area, and I don't know if you guys have know anything about L.A., but we're one of the cities that deal with the most, like, we have the highest incarceration rate in the U.S., and along with that, we have a lot of issues with, like, driver's license being suspended, with them having that kind of barrier. And a lot of the employers, including the unions that we work with, they do require them to have a driver's license. So that's one of the things that we try to address with them is, like, taking care of their legal issues, taking care of those driver's licenses so that they can find employment once they leave our organization, and really working with them. I know that most of I think what sets our program apart or the success rate that we may have is that they are with our program a little bit longer than most of most other programs. So with us, they could be with us prior to being enrolled in the program. They may have been here for a couple of months. They may have been here for a couple of weeks. But we do get an opportunity, like Denise said, to address those, like, life skills issues that they may have, those work readiness issues. And so I think one of the things that has allowed us to be successful is really partnering up with different agencies and different departments within our own organization. So having, like, working with our local chamber and getting our young people work readiness certified. So that's one thing that we offer them. So if you have some, if you can look into your local chamber or what your local communities may offer and how you can bring those resources in. We even work with some of our local banks to do financial literacy. So it all varies depending on like what we're working on at that particular time. But our main focus is getting them ready to, because that's one of the things that we struggle with is, like, actually finding, not finding the employment, but having them have the tools that they need to be successful once they leave our program. So that's one of the things that that we focus on is, like, the life skills, the work readiness, because the certificates and everything are nice, but if they're not going to be able to keep those jobs, that's one of the things that we try to make sure that they're ready once they transition out.
And so our environmental training basically is like a transition program for the LA Conservation Corps because of the certifications and that they get. And then our training provider is a local union, the Heat and Frost Asbestos Union. And so a lot of our participants have that opportunity to also join that union because we kind of tailor our training towards their pre-apprentice. So they're already kind of getting the same certifications as if they as if they went to that union and applied.
Did you guys have any questions or anything that you guys wanted us to, like, touch on or?
Well, what's really interesting, Denise and Gabby, is your model. We have different programs. Some people go it alone. They do everything by themselves. They're a nonprofit. They form this nonprofit. We have others that are WIBs. We've got some that are community colleges. We've got some that are community development corporations. So everyone's different, but you've got a very interesting approach. And when you decided to develop you have an organization that's been around for 30 years. Then 10 years ago, you got into Youth Build as the core. And if you people need to go to the website, which we'll put in the notes, but if you look at your organizational structure, it's really interesting. You've got clean and green programs, but you've got an adult education, a young adult education program. And within that organization, you must have 10 different programs, which includes Youth Build, and it includes the EPA Workforce Development Program, probably in, when you had the minority worker training, it probably was in there. How do you interact with those? Are there synergies that you have, or do you get your graduate, do you recruit from, say, the Youth Build? But you decided, basically, rather than go it alone and try to bring in all these services, you decided it's kind of like a stick of bubble gum that goes onto a train or a new car that goes onto a train. And rather than build a whole train, LA Youth Corps decided, let's put a car on the train. And we're going to benefit from all those other cars and the engine and all the fuel and all that stuff taken care of. So you could use the EPA funds strictly for EPA remediation training, which you're doing. So it's really an efficient model. But could you tell us a little bit about that?
So we do have a recruitment department here at the Corps. And so they recruit the young individuals to come in. And so our environmental job training program also, the recruiter recruits individuals as well. We have a weekly orientation. So for those individuals who's not in the Corps, haven't joined the Corps, they have an opportunity to take advantage of their environmental job training program. And then we have participants in the Corps that's enrolled into other avenues, that's other programs that we have within the LA Conservation Corps, where they might decide that, I want to do, because we're doing a career path. We have a career path program that we're offering, which is construction, environmental, manufacturing, landscaping,
zero waste, and then we have a college and customer service pathway. So that pathway, those pathways will allow our core members to really select what career they would want to focus on, it gives us the opportunity to, yes, select within our program, so kind of really cater our program to service our youth. But at the same time, like I had said earlier, we work with different agencies, like local agencies that we work with, like the local workforce centers. So part of those people, sometimes those agencies that we work with will also refer people that may not be in our program but could use the services that we have to offer. To our program. So the nice thing about the Brownfields, the job training program, is that it gives us leeway to service those people that may not qualify for, let's say, our program. Like somebody who's like 27 or 28 or 30, they may not be able to enroll into our young adult program, but we can still service them through the environmental job training program. So it allows us to include a larger population of our community into our training program versus just focusing on our 18 to 24-year-olds, which is nice, but it also gives us the opportunity to open it up to other like another population of people that we may not be directly working with already.
But if, say, you have someone in Youth Corps and Youth Build, and they're doing a great job and they've learned all these building skills, but they say, and they're really good students, they say, I'd like to get involved in environmental remediation, say lead abatement, because I found out that there's a lot of jobs in lead abatement, it's good paying, better than construction. Can they now apply to your program?
Yes, they can. If they decide that the construction track, and then they meet all those outcomes for the Youth Build program, and they, if that training is set up and they want to take advantage of the opportunity, we do allow them to.
And some of the local unions, like we have a local carpenters union that focuses on that does like all carpentry work. But some of the classes that they have to offer while they're in the apprenticeship are some of the classes that we're offering here. So they're going into these union, these pre-apprenticeships with more things than other pre-apprentices may have. So it really works to their benefit as far as like being able to move up within the union. So, they may go into the Carpenters Union and, if they're a Youth Build participant, and they can go in there with their 40 hours, with their lead, their all of these different certificates that the school may be offering, but they don't have to take those classes because they already have that. So they can focus on a different class or a different training. So all of these things are things that can kind of be, like they can use them in different elements. So it doesn't just have to be like youth builds, core members. Yes, they're focusing on construction, but there's different elements to that construction career that they may have chosen.
A little like arts program, arts Shanks up up the state there has that construction program, and then he kind of can cherry pick for those who are motivated to go on to environmental,
mm-hmm.
and then run them through that environmental program.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we kind of similarly do that. If that's what, you know, we let it be an opportunity for them if they chose to take that opportunity,
mm-hmm.
but we don't kind of incorporate it in, like, you know, run two programs. As one.
Yeah.
They're too separate. So.
Yeah. You've got an incredible placement rate, too, I understand, that really up there, 80% plus.
Mm-hmm.
How do you go about placing? Do you have a specific person, or do you work through the WIBs? Your WIBs, everybody calls a WIB differently. You call them employment centers, but everyone needs to work with the WIB. We call it the WIB as a generic
right.
for all of those jobs.
Mm-hmm. We call them WIBs, too. I have three, I call them work source centers. We have three work source centers that sits on our advisory board. And then I have some environmental staffing agencies that, you know, that get, that environmental contractors who go through these staffing agencies, so they have the database of all the employment. and then I have three unions that sit on the advisory board as well, and one of them, I mentioned Local 5, who is the Heat and Frost Asbestos Union, and they provide the training for us, their environmental training, for, you know, the training part of them.
The actual training. Yeah, the actual certification training, they provide that.
Do they charge you for that?
Yes.
Oh, that's really good.
And so having these, you know, these kind of key players, stakeholders at the table, you know, like I said, it's advisory board, so they're always giving us information on trends, what we should change, what we need to add, what's coming down the pipe that's new, that's going to change, what we shouldn't do anymore because, you know, the individual's not, you know, they're not focusing on that, you know, they're not going to get hired with that. So having these key stakeholders at the table, and we meet every other month, I can say that basically helps our success, you know, assessment rate,
mm-hmm.
keep our placement rate, having them at the table. So you definitely need to establish advisory board and reach out to your community stakeholders and employers and training providers. Because we also have other training providers who sit on the advisory board, and sometimes they offer us free training that we can add. Without, you know, with no charge that we can add to the environmental job training. Because at the end, some of those training providers, they also have connections to contractors and different things. And so a lot of times they're looking for participants and, you know, to be hired.
You know, you're working with one of the most difficult target populations down there in Compton, and I assume that you're tell us a little bit about recruitment. How do you work as far as bringing your lot of people who want to get into the program down to 20 or so that you feel can get through the program? Do you have any selection criteria? You take ex offenders. Do they have to be drug free, or how do you screen your participants?
Oh, sorry about that. We didn't talk about the screening process. So what we do is, like I said, we have orientation every week. They come in, they fill out an application. We tell them about what our and I'm talking about the environmental training because the LA Conservation Corps has a whole other process that they're due. So I'm talking about the environmental training. So what we do is they come in, they come to the orientation. We can run a video about what our training offers, what's the expectations, how you'd be eligible, what documentation you would need. They fill out the application, and if, you know, the application looks good and they can be a fit for the program, we invite them back for an interview, and we have a one-on-one interview. We ask them questions pertaining to some of the certifications, because during the orientation, we ask them to do their research. What is HAZMAT? What's asbestos? What is lead? You know, because a lot of times individuals, you know, they hear about the training because someone else, word of mouth, told them about it, and they're working and they got a good job. But then when they start going through the training, they realize, well, I really don't want to get into that field. So I'll let individuals know, please do your research, do your homework before you come to my interview. So you'll know what you're talking about and know if this is something that you really want to get into. So after the interview, we do have a scoring process. And if they score 10, then they're asked to come back. And when they come back, they have to take a medical screening. We do a medical screening, which is basically checking the mercury and checking, doing x-ray, chest x-ray, and then they take a drug test. And we let them know that you will be drug tested, because in this industry, you need to be drug-free.
Okay.
So that's kind of like our...
What about academic? But they can have a... They could have a record. That,
yes, they can. They can have a background.
Okay. And what about academically? Do they have to take a TAB test or some sort of a academic test to some level?
Yeah, we do the CASAS test with them. It's CASAS test where we test them in the math and reading.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a cutoff or just?
Well, our goal with them is that they improve. So when they first come in, we'll do that assessment, that English and or that reading and math, and then we'll do it like 6 to 9 months out of the program. We'll do another one to make sure that they've improved their score, and then obviously during that time frame, we'll be working with them on improving their score.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to have a high school diploma. They must have, you know, their high school diploma that actually.
Mm-hmm.
Even though some of the jobs don't require the high school diploma, mm-hmm. but we do as an agency. That's, you know, they need to, you know, have their high school diploma already.
Well, you know, you made a very good point on the drug test, and most employers, they will hire someone that has a record. And sometimes you get to get a surety bonds, and it depends on the crimes, but hardly anyone will take someone who's got a drug problem.
Right, and I also we also have someone that's in probation and parole that sits on our advisory board.
Oh.
So, you know, it's good to have, you know, them key players at the table too.
Mm-hmm.
Because they refer some of their clients or, you know, their kind of partner clients to us, and then they can also, you know, they also take what we're talking about in a meeting and take it back to their kind of partner. So I have two that sits on our advisory board.
You all really use extensive, we call it leveraging, a fancy word for just using everyone around you. It's really neat because
it helps.
You're only getting $200,000, but you've got all these resources that they're coming in for no cost or low cost and
right.
You know, helping you along. That's really a great way to leverage your program. That takes a lot of work to get those people going. And I'm sure everyone that gets in touch with your program gives you advice on who you need to contact, where you can get some more leverage resources, or where you could maybe find some employers who are looking for people. So
right.
It's kind of a lot of word of mouth type of thing. What's been your biggest challenge of you in running the program?
Honestly, for me, it's been getting them ready to take that step into, like, a career. And so the sacrifice that comes with the career, like, sometimes, you know, you have to show up at a job at 4 a.m. or you have to be there at 6 a.m. And just changing that, shifting that mindset to really commit and fully be committed to that change. Is kind of what I know has been challenging as far as, like, doing the job placement and making sure that they keep their job. That, to me, has been the challenging part. The training part is the easy part. It's fun. They're learning new things. So that's the easy part. The hard part is actually the commitment and the follow-through with staying at a job or, you know, being committed to the continual growth.
Yeah.
Do they show up 6 days a week, like a work week, or do you do this?
5 days, Monday through Friday.
What happens if they don't show up?
That's a hard, something that we deal with often. We honestly try to work with them still. We're not very quick to just cut people off. And maybe that's why we have seen a good success rate in that we still work with them. So maybe someone didn't get to finish a training. If they missed, you know, if you miss a day of 40-hour hazardous waste, they're not going to give you that cert. And so the money's already been invested in this client. So even though they didn't get that cert, I would encourage you all to still work with those participants and really get down to the reason why they're missing or why they're late. Because there's a reason behind it, and they may not be upfront with you about it, but there's a reason why they're being late or why they may have missed that day. And just having that conversation with them about, like, hey, you missed this day, and now you're not going to get your certificate, and just encouraging them to try to get whatever they can, because even if they don't get the 40-hour hazardous, you know, you could still get a job doing lead abatement, or you could still get a job doing something else in the field. And then you can later on address the missing certificate. But just being real patient with them and understanding, and also holding them accountable, like holding them accountable to, okay, you didn't finish this training, but this is what we can do to, you know, not fix the situation, but move forward from the situation. And then you just really put the ball back on their court, and they can make the decision whether or not they want to finish the training. But you know, our goal for us is to get them placed in jobs. And if it's a lead job, well, then it's going to be a lead job. But whatever they can finish, that's what we really focus on.
Well, that's interesting. You're the nurturing. You fall into that nurturing group. You've got the strive-type groups where you miss and you're out. But you've got to look at your population. You may be working with people who just have never done this before.
Right, exactly.
And it's more difficult for them.
And I mean, we do have standards. Don't get me wrong. Like, we do have a set standard that we expect you to be on time. We expect you to be here. But we also understand that there are life circumstances that may happen, and it's a case by case situation. But our goal really is to help as many people as we can, especially if they're already enrolled in our program. Our goal is to help them as much as we can.
Anyone have questions out there? I've kind of asked a lot of questions. Anyone have any questions? Denise and Gabby, you guys have done a great job, and you continue to do a great job. I hope it's okay if someone does have questions, if they see the notes or whatever, if it's okay that they call you. Particularly, I know we've had questions of, we've got a core, you know, there are cores, there are 100 cores in every state in the union, and I think there are a lot of people out there who might say, well, we just can't start one of these job training programs on our own, but maybe if we link up with a core, we could figure out a way of jumping onto their bandwagon, and they don't deliver environmental training, and maybe they will if we can bring this program into theirs. And you've done it, and you're doing it, so if it's okay, they can give you a call or something. Is that all right?
Yeah, sure.
Call or email.
I'll put your email in, and I'll put your contact information. And thanks, and gee, keep up the good work. You guys are doing a great job out there.
Thank you.
Anyone? Last chance at Gabby and Denise? Well, we hope we're going to see you at the annual all-grantee meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Thank you very much, all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much. Bye-bye. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Mike.